Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود باعث تو لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners, sisters and brothers. Thank you for joining us in a new episode of For a Better Life. This is IRB English Radio. I am Asma, a student of English literature, and today, once again, I have the honor to be at your service. So in here, as always, we go through some topics that give us some hints to think more and more about our life and how to improve it. A friend is like a star that twinkles and glows. Or maybe like the ocean that gently flows. A friend is like gold that you should treasure and take care of forever and ever. A friend is like an angel that is there to guide you. A friend is someone you can trust out of a few. So, as just this poem says, today's episode is all about friendships and all of the friends that you have. And of course, the role of your friends in the book of your life. Friends are the sweet fruit that come as a blessing to save us from loneliness and be our partners in the most stupid crimes or the most successful achievements of our life. There's no doubt that friends can hoist me up to a better me or just drag me down to a lesser, disgusting me. Because they have the power to get through me and change me to either a good being or a bad one. Now, it's not always so easy to differentiate between our friends because it's not like the fancy cartoons where a wolf or a witch are just clearly distinguished as enemy to others. In real life, it might take a lifetime to know that your friends were not as worthy as you just thought them to be. And sometimes some friendships might cost you so much, after which you lose your confidence and trust. So, as you already know, finding a true friend is a pretty difficult task, and it's not as easy as the word goes. Now, who is the good friend? Who is the bad one? What actually differentiates between the two of them, and what will be the consequences of picking a bad one? Well, to get the answer, let's go for a timeout and then we'll be back with the rest of our topic.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah. Ya Allah, ya Allah, be with me far the way.
Welcome back to your favorite program. This is For a Better Life. We are talking about friends, everyone's favorite topic, and how they might affect us. As we just mentioned earlier, to pick a good friend out of a huge crowd is a difficult task. We may not get the meaning of this message until we are stuck with a bad friend who's caused us so much of despair. Really, and honestly, I'm telling you this from the depth of my heart, because sometimes I've seen it in life that when you pick a friend and you count so much on them, but then when the rainy day comes and you see the truth of them, you will understand that whatever you've been through was just a hallucination. It was just something wrong that you felt is going to work out. And actually, it's not going to end up like this easily. It's going to have so much of effects on you. It's going to break you down and damage you. It is important enough that even in the Holy Book of Quran, we have some verses talking about friends. There's a verse that says, there comes a day when the unjust, the one who has done injustice to themselves, shall bite his hands and say, I wish I never took such a creature as my friend. The Prophet ﷺ says, a man is of the same religion as his friends. Then every one of you must be careful with whom you are associating. Also, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, avoid associating with a vicious friend because he will destroy and belittle his friend. That means, actually, and literally, it means don't go for the wrong guy because that wrong guy is going to destroy you. And not only that, he will belittle you and drag you down. Instead of helping you go upper and find salvation, then they will drag you to hell. In other narrations, Imam Ali alayhi salam tells us, companionship with the bad causes suspicion toward the good one, and companionship with the good ones causes the good ones to be connected with the bad ones. Thus, if anybody is difficult to be understood or his religion is hard to find out, look at his friends. If his friends are religious people, so he is.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Prophet used to say, one who believes in God and in the day of resurrection should not make friends with either infidels or the wrongdoers. Anybody who does so is both infidel and wrongdoer. Imam Ali alayhi salam also says, a companion is like a relative because where a relative has a blood relation with one, a companion has a spiritual bond and relation with you. Friends are one soul in different bodies. So as you can see, there are quite too much of narrations about friendships and how to find your perfect patch, the one who's going to work as the shining diamond, who's going to be there always for you and help you and make you find salvation. But it's not always like that, because sometimes the single bad friend that you're going to have in your life might sound so trivial, but they're going to have impact on the way you think and the way you look at other people and the way you're going to make decisions. So it's not very much of a simple thing. And there's something actually, I've read it somewhere and it was very much interesting. And ever since there is a discussion about friendship, I just remember that it said that, tell me who your friend is so that I can tell you who you are. So don't take this thing as very much of a trivial thing. It is very much important. In the Holy Book, actually, it's been used the word of qareen for friend. That means pretty much close, like we should actually call it a soulmate. Go for the ones as your soulmates who are pretty much afraid of Allah, have this fear of Allah in their heart, so that they would never do you wrong because they believe in the Almighty who is watching over them, and they will never lead you into stray. They will never lead you to deviation from the true path of humanity. And that's all about friendship. I guess every single one of us has too much of experience to share about friends and the friendships they had, we actually have in our life. Because ever since we're children, we start making friends at schools, and then we grow older, we start to find those friends outside. So it's actually pretty much funny and interesting, but at the very same time, it's very delicate and very important, and we should take care of it pretty much, because a good friend means a lot in your life and will, just as I told you, will hoist you up to the level of salvation and be your friend even in the hereafter. So this was all the time that we had for today's episode. Thank you for staying with us until another session. May Allah protect you with His never-sleeping eyes. Thank you again. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land He knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand He knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash He knows. Every thought I have and every word I share.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The Pentagon has admitted that the United States has soldiers on the ground in the Ukraine and far from their embassy, a decision which drastically increases the chances of accidentally sparking an all-out war with Russia. The troops are allegedly only inspecting and doing a proper accounting of U.S. arms deliveries to Ukraine, but many have alleged that their actual role is to provide weapons training and perhaps more. The United States has already provided nearly $20 billion worth of military equipment to Ukraine this year. Both Republican leaders and some progressive Democrats have openly criticized the costly aid, which has only further escalated the conflict. It has already been widely reported that scores of U.S. ex-military personnel and retired officers are helping to lead the war from inside Ukraine. The Pentagon claims the so-called inspectors will not travel to the front lines, but that gives many little comfort.
I think they're acting very recklessly, and they're dragging us to something that could be completely avoided now that you have, you know, Russia saying, hey, we'll use nukes if you don't back off, right? And I think this isn't a war between, you know, Ukraine and the United States. This isn't a war between Ukraine and Russia. It's a war between NATO using Ukraine as a proxy to weaken Russia.
Washington has known for months that their weapons shipments went totally untraced once they entered into Ukraine. Not only does that facilitate Defense Department mismanagement and possible corruption, but the arms could wind up in the hands of far-right militias and be used to destabilize the area for years, as NATO weapons did in the Balkans and then Libya. U.S. weapons have already been found to have been illicitly diverted to Sweden, Denmark, and as far away as the Netherlands.
When you have the United States, when you have the Pentagon saying, hey, we're going to post all these long-range missiles on your border, Ukraine, so that you can reach Moscow in 6 minutes, obviously Russia is going to do something about it. So I think the United States foreign policy right now is essentially pouring billions into Ukraine, pouring like billions into mercenaries, pouring billion into this proxy war in order to weaken Russia.
With the U.S. kicked out of Afghanistan, illegally occupying northeastern Syria, and precariously perched in Iraq, many wonder if Washington and NATO have chosen the Ukraine for their new theater of war. Anti-NATO demonstrations across Europe have been violently repressed in recent weeks. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
A new report by the Afghan Journalistic Center shows that at least 127 journalists and media workers lost their lives during the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan. Investigations also show that in more than 90% of those cases, the ones responsible for the deaths were not brought to justice. The Association of Afghan Reporters is demanding the International Criminal Court to take a look into the killings. People are also asking the Taliban to stay true to what it has promised and show support towards Afghan journalists. That includes ending impunity for crimes against this group of workers who are constantly under danger in a war-torn country.
the U.S. started the war on Afghanistan and caused devastation and casualties. It should be held accountable for the death of all civilians, especially journalists, in the past 20 years. The International Criminal Court should investigate the killing cases of Afghan journalists and recognize them as international crimes. The families of a slain journalist should be paid compensation. Unfortunately, so far, not a single case has been suspected.
This comes as those 127 martyred journalists have been two honest and dedicated staff, Said Farhad Takaddusi and Habibullah Hussainzadeh, who lost their lives on duty in 2011 and 2017. The relatives and colleagues of the two continue to honor their memory.
Two of our colleagues at Press TV were among the victims of U.S. war on Afghanistan. Syed Farhad in 2011 and Habibullah was martyred in 2017, both on duty and in war incidents. They were so close to me and meant a lot for Press TV and the medium community in Afghanistan. Their loss should not be forgotten or ignored. We demand justice and compensation for their families.
The commemoration of martyrs comes as the Afghanistan situation is still tense for journalists. Rights bodies are calling for support and protection by the ruling Taliban and the international community. Due to war and insecurity, Afghanistan has been one of the most dangerous countries for reporters. And there have been journalists like Press TV's martyrs who gave their lives in the line of duty. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Rating agency Moody's has recently changed its ratings outlook on Italy's banking system from stable to negative. Business conditions for Italy's banks are expected to further worsen in the coming 12 to 18 months, especially with regard to the quality of their loans and earnings. The news broke at the heels of a series of downgrades in medium-term growth forecasts by the Bank of Italy, the National Bureau of Statistics, ISTAT, Employers Association Confindustria, and the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development.
We will hold a highly important cabinet meeting on Friday, during which we will discuss new budgetary targets as the government is racing against time to draft the 2023 budget law.
Italy's statistical agency ISTAT has predicted that the Italian economy will be flat in 2023 after growth of around 3 to 3.5% this year. Moody's forecast was even more cautious, predicting 2.7% growth for this year as a whole and zero growth next year.
The challenges for Italy go well beyond economic growth. Prices have reached record highs lately, with the country's annual inflation rate hitting almost 12% in October and energy costs still out of control. In addition to that, the euro's weakness with respect to the American dollar has significantly eroded the purchasing power of the Italians.
Milk, bread, pasta, all these basic items cost much more now. I'm very worried.
When you go grocery shopping, but also when you buy fuel or are faced with paying exorbitant energy bills, everything seems to be out of control. That said, I am pretty sure that they are not telling us the truth about what's really going on.
On Thursday, Italy's new far-right Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni traveled to Brussels to meet with the leaders of European Union institutions for the first time. In the Belgian capital, Meloni held two meetings with the President of the European Parliament, Roberta Metsola, and EU Commissioner for Economy, Paolo Gentiloni, in which her main ask was reportedly greater joint EU efforts to cope with energy costs. Max Civili, Rome.
An attack on the convoy of ousted Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan wounded him and several of his supporters who were marching towards Islamabad, demanding early elections. Police said that a gunman opened fire at the campaign truck carrying Imran Khan, wounding him slightly. Since his ouster in a parliamentary no-confidence vote in April, Khan has been alleging that his dismissal was a conspiracy engineered by his successor Shahbaz Sharif and the United States. The PTI leadership has directly blamed Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif, Interior Minister Rana Sanaullah, and a high-ranking military official for carrying out the assassination attempt.
We demand that these three men should be removed from their posts. If these people are not removed from their positions, then there will be nationwide protests.
While asking Imran Khan's supporters to stop the blame game, the government has assured every possible support for holding high-profile inquiry into the assassination attempt.
The incident is very unfortunate and condemnable, but it should not be politicized, and speculations on this incident must be avoided.
Political experts believe that the attack on the PTI party chief will trigger further political instability and chaos in the country.
I think in the days to come, the Pakistani political atmosphere will be more charged. It will be more violent. This gun attack on Khan will definitely change Pakistan's political scenario.
The attack on the former Pakistani premier also sparked countrywide protest and international condemnations.
The attack on the former Pakistani prime minister has further fueled the ongoing political tensions. It is highly believed that more confrontations would be witnessed in days to come in the country's political arena. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
The United States has entered its last week before the midterm legislative vote, and tensions are starting to escalate. The Republicans appear certain to win the lower House of Representatives and need to win only one of four now neck-and-neck races to also control the upper Senate. Some Democrats have called the polls Republican propaganda, further undermining confidence in their predictions and creating more uncertainty.
I think it should just be positive. It's very hard to decide what is the truth and what isn't. You get the one candidate, and then the next candidate says everything that the first candidate said is wrong on the commercial. We've started muting them.
Perhaps the most telling poll is one which showed that a whopping 79% of Americans believe that the country is out of control. Many say there's no lack of reasons for such a perception. The specter of a divided and thus ineffective federal government, record inflation, a prolonged drug epidemic, regular mass shootings, a likely double-dip recession, fear-mongering about war with Russia over Ukraine or with China over Taiwan, a cultural war over identity politics, and more.
Perception is reality, right? So, when we see the political attacks that have happened on both sides, it kind of gives that impression. I think the media can feed into that at times as well. I think that's a pretty accurate assessment of where we're at, unfortunately.
The recent in-home attack on the husband of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who holds the number three post in the American system, has become embroiled in salacious controversy. Similar to the Hunter Biden laptop affair in the autumn of 2020, the case is dominating the pre-vote headlines and producing partisan allegations of either misinformation or a cover-up. Since 2017, the number of investigated threats against Washington's lawmakers has tripled. Perhaps the biggest problem in the United States hasn't even occurred yet, the near certainty of disputed election results. Some tight Senate races may require runoff votes, meaning the final outcome will likely be controversial for weeks. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
The UK government has abandoned plans to create a working definition of Islamophobia in a move which has come under heavy fire from critics. Back in May 2019, the then government headed by Theresa May agreed it would seek to establish an Islamophobia definition to get a firmer grip of this bigotry and division. But following mounting frustration over a lack of progress on the issue, the effort has now been reportedly ditched.
The news is hardly surprising, as May's successor, Boris Johnson, has been faulted many times over for saying Islamophobic things, whilst other Tory ministers have also been accused of being deeply Islamophobic themselves.
Reappointed Communities Secretary Michael Gove has been a long-time critic of so-called political Islam and condemned attempts to define Islamophobia as a danger for free speech.
Michael Gove, while he was at Policy Exchange, was very much supportive of anything which, as far as he was concerned, outed Islam. He calls it political Islam. But actually, in reality, it's a phobia which these folk have about any kind of Muslim. When you look at and compare it to how they deal with anti-Semitism, and they're so absolutely hell-bent on definitions, on laws, on rooting out, on chasing, hunting down, witch-hunting anybody who even sniffs the idea of something to do with Jewry, or even say the J word, or even to raise the issue of Zionism, for instance, or to criticize Israel. As soon as you do these things, as far as these neoconservatives are concerned, you are enemy number one.
Islamophobia is a serious problem across Britain. Muslims being the most frequently targeted group for religious hate crimes in England and Wales. Defining Islamophobia could provide new powers to combat anti-Muslim hate. But with a string of scandals having exposed anti-Muslim bigotry within the ruling party itself, Conservatives just don't seem willing to risk shooting themselves in the foot on the issue. Robert Carter, London.
In a narrow alley in the Itaewon Entertainment District of Seoul, more than 150 people suffocated and died in the crush of a crowd on a Halloween Saturday evening. 26 of them were foreigners. Five of those were Iranian, the most of any foreign nationals, exchange students in their 20s and 30s. This week, the lives lost in the Itaewon tragedy are being mourned with white chrysanthemums and black ribbons. And as the investigation into what happened begins, tough questions are being asked of the government and of the police about what more could have been done to prevent such a disaster. As video and news of the event has circulated in both mass and social media, frustration at the response of the government and police has swelled.
Our country is not even at war. Whose fault is it for this to happen? Why were they so careless? Where were the police? This tragedy wouldn't have happened if the police had controlled traffic with a little effort. What are you going to do after killing all those young people?
South Korean Prime Minister Han Duck-soo appeared before the foreign press Tuesday. He suggested South Korea was still one of the safest countries in the world and that preparations were inadequate in part because the event was not registered. But he admitted some failures.
The real issue was some deficiencies in our crowd management. That kind of deficiencies in our system should have been corrected long before, but it's a reality that it hasn't been done, and at least we should not pass that away again.
The Itaewon tragedy is South Korea's worst disaster since 2014. When a ferry sank, killing 304 people, most of them students on a field trip. Frank Smith, Seoul.
A group of Iranians, among them war veterans, gathered in front of the German embassy in Tehran to protest against the German government for Berlin's role in the recent riots in Iran. The protesters, including ordinary people and veterans of the 8-year Iraqi-imposed war on Iran in the 1980s, carried placards and chanted slogans against the German government for its record of supporting former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein and its role in the recent unrest in Iran.
A number of my comrades and friends became handicapped and some were martyred in the war because of the enemy's chemical attacks. Documents that have been released revealed that Germany had provided Saddam with raw materials for chemical bombs. Therefore, we are to say that we do not allow Germany to interfere in the internal affairs of our country anymore. We hold Germany responsible for instigating unrest in Iran.
The demonstrators also vented their anger on the German chancellor and foreign minister.
I am taking part in this protest gathering to condemn the German government for its interventionist stance towards Iranian affairs. We know that Germany and other EU member states, by supporting riots and unrest in Iran, are only after their own vested interests, and they do not truly care about Iranian people.
On Monday, Iran's foreign minister spokesman criticized Germany for its unconstructive initiative to classify the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps as a terrorist organization. Condemning Germany's move as an irresponsible measure, Nasser Kanani said Tehran hopes that the governments of Germany and other governments would take account of the outcome of their unconstructive measures.
Iranian officials believe that repeating such an approach by Germany and other EU member states towards Iran, which is based on miscalculations and misinformation, will once again expose the Union to failure. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
In more than 900 cities nationwide, Iranians from all walks of life took to the streets on Friday, November the 4th, to mark National Students' Day, the anniversary of the U.S. Embassy takeover, which is also called the National Day Against Global Arrogance. In the capital, Tehran, masses gathered in the streets leading to the building that used to be the U.S. Embassy in Iran before the Islamic Revolution. They chanted slogans expressing their anger and frustration with U.S. hostile policies towards the Islamic Republic of Iran.
We have come here to show our support for our leader in the face of enemies of our country, including the U.S.
Our presence today shows the U.S. that the nation is vigilant and we will not bow down to U.S. plots.
Considering the recent riots, it was even more important for me to take part in the rally this year. We have to show to the world that we love Iran and we support the Islamic Republic.
We are here, and it's literally, we're coming onto the streets 43 years. You cannot find any more democratic country than Iran. What's the turnout of elections in Europe, in the West? They're supposed to be like the civilization and democracy, land of democracy. What's the turnout of their election? Look at all these people. These are coming by themselves.
Every year on the 13th day of the Iranian month of Aban, the Iranian nation, particularly students, hold rallies across the country to mark Students' Day. But this year's rallies come amid violent foreign-backed riots in the country, which have claimed the lives of dozens of people and security forces.
What's significant about this year's 13th of Aban, or Students' Day demonstrations, is the fact that the younger generation taking part in masses to send their message to the world, in particular, many young ladies taking part in this year's demonstration.
The U.S. should know that we have chosen to wear our hijab, and no one can force us to take it off.
Our hijab is a symbol of our religion and our faith. Our country is an Islamic country, and this is the way we choose to live.
In a statement, the demonstrators pledged allegiance to the Islamic Republic and the Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei. They also called on authorities to address people's legitimate demands and also draw a line between peaceful protesters and rioters. Kisumi Shah Ahmadi, Tehran.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
With a COP27 United Nations climate summit about to begin in Egypt, the host country has expressed frustration at world leaders making positive statements that are abandoned in negotiations. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has more for us. Governments meeting for vital climate talks have been accused of making positive commitments in public but denying them later in the privacy of the negotiating rooms by the Egyptian hosts of the summit. While Abul Majd, the Egyptian diplomat in charge of running the negotiations at the COP27 United Nations Climate Summit, has said, "Political statements and pledges are made in front of the cameras, but in the negotiating rooms, it's back to the adversarial approach. These publicly positive positions will not be of value until translated into the negotiating rooms. And that has not been the case so far." Egypt has been frustrated by countries making positive statements in public that do not reflect the blocks that have appeared in the negotiations on vital issues such as climate finance, loss and damage, and cuts to greenhouse gas emissions. "We can't continue on this adversarial path." While Abul Majd said, "The separation between what is happening in the public sphere and what is happening in the negotiating rooms cannot continue. We all need to show a spirit of compromise." The climate talks begin formally on Sunday in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, but many delegations have already arrived and countries have been meeting online and in person in various combinations for months. On Monday, 7th of November, at least 120 heads of state and government will gather for 2 days of intensive discussions to thrash out positions that will be taken by the negotiators over the following 2 weeks of talks. Britain's Prime Minister Rishi Sunak is expected to attend the summit, having previously snubbed the conference. On Friday, Rishi Sunak spoke about the importance of the conference. "As recent events have shown, delivering on the promise of Glasgow is more important than ever," he said. "More important because every moment we allow climate change to ravage our planet, we will see more human suffering like the devastating floods in Pakistan. And more important because if we do not act today, we will risk leaving an ever more desperate inheritance for our children." The French President Emmanuel Macron and the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen will also attend the summit, along with a host of African leaders, as this is the first COP summit to take place in Africa for 6 years. Sameh Shoukry, the Egyptian foreign minister who will preside over the talks, told The Guardian that the prospect of limiting global temperatures to 1.5 degrees Celsius was more fragile than ever. "Climate finance will be a key bone of contention at the talks, along with the vexed question of loss and damage, which refers to assistance for severe impacts that vulnerable countries are increasingly facing from extreme weather events." Many countries want loss and damage to feature prominently on the COP27 agenda, but that cannot be formalized until Sunday when the talks begin. The Associated Press has more for us. Egypt's foreign minister on Wednesday, 2nd of November, urged world leaders and negotiators to deliver on previously made pledges to battle climate change ahead of this month's United Nations summit. Sameh Shoukry, the president of the COP27 climate change conference to be held in the Egyptian town of Sharm el-Sheikh from 6th through to 18th of November, said participants should aim to take meaningful and tangible steps to implement the 2015 Paris Climate Accord. The Paris Agreement aims to keep global temperatures from rising another degree Celsius between now and 2100, a key demand of poor countries ravaged by rising sea levels and other effects of climate change. Last year's summit in Glasgow, Scotland, produced a compromise deal aimed at keeping that key global warming target alive. "We aim to restore the grand bargain at the centre of the Paris Climate Accord and our collective multilateral climate process," Sameh Shoukry said in a 4-page letter to world leaders and delegates taking part in the COP27 climate summit. This year, the picture is less encouraging, he said, warning of backsliding on the delivery of finance pledges to developing countries to increase their efforts to address climate change. Sameh Shoukry said the summit comes amid uphill challenges, including the failure of the G20 meeting of industrialized and emerging market nations earlier this year to produce an agreement on the environment. He also pointed to a lack of concrete agreements to allow financial support to address the impacts of climate change during the fall meeting of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, the IMF. The annual conference convenes 197 nations for deliberations on how to address climate change. The COP27 United Nations Summit comes as the world faces an energy crisis and a war in Europe that have rattled the global economy. In recent years, many developing nations and activists have increased long-standing calls to establish a fund to compensate poor countries for devastation brought on by climate change, disproportionately caused by rich countries because of past greenhouse gas emissions. The call was rejected during last year's summit. Many supporters of the idea, often called loss and damage, hope to make progress on it this month. Their arguments could get a boost by the symbolic significance of the conference being held in Egypt, a country in North Africa. The Egyptian minister said significant progress was achieved over the past year, including a $40 billion resilience fund created by the International Monetary Fund and the Green Climate Fund, which provides some $2.5 billion a year to support developing countries addressing impacts of climate change.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته Dear listeners, brothers and sisters from all around the world I hope you're all doing well You're listening to me from Youth Station This is RIP English Radio I am Bita, a medical student at your service And with me I have a really special guest Brother Muzaffar
Choo-choo-choo-choo-choo-choo It's the Youth Station for you Assalamu alaikum, Sister Bita and dear listeners out there
Yeah. So, my dear brother, today we're going to go through a beautiful topic, I think. Actually, as you know, in our lives, there are many things that we treasure. There are so important things that we try to, you know, not to be ignorant about them. What is your most important treasure in your life?
There's
Tell
loads
me that.
Of things that come to mind immediately, you know, my kids, my
nice.
Wife, my family.
Your beloved ones.
Yeah. My work, my
Good.
Studies. So there's this video game called Final Fantasy. I don't know if you know it. Final Fantasy VII.
I know that, of course.
So Final Fantasy VII is like, I grew up with Final Fantasy VII.
Nice.
It's one of my favorite games. It's really cool, actually.
You know, I've never thought that you would be interested in that sort of thing.
It is so cool because, okay, look, you're playing as a kind of group of rebels.
Yeah.
And the biggest bad guy is basically a mega corporation, which basically represents kind of the corporate America. And you have to go around basically like blowing up these huge reactors, which that mega corporation called Shinra is using to suck the life out of the planet.
Yeah.
And there's also a bad guy called Sephiroth. Sephiroth, if you do research into it, it's actually part of the Jewish Kabbalist literature where they believe in different kind of mystical, magical things.
Yeah.
Right. So the biggest bad guy is called Sephiroth. He's got a massive sword, he's got grey hair, and he believes he's the chosen one.
I see.
Right? And he just wants to kill everybody and use the planet for it as his slave planet, right? And okay. There's a scene where Cloud is the good guy. Sorry, I get really excited about Final Fantasy, right?
Okay.
So Cloud, he's the good guy, right? He's the hero, and he's fighting him, and then the bad guy comes and he goes, "Tell me what you treasure most so that I can have the pleasure of taking it from you." Cloud just goes, "You just don't get it, do you?" And then he hits him with his sword and he goes, "There's not a thing I don't cherish." And then he kills him. It's so epic.
I see that you're really interested in that sort of thing. I know. But, you know, I'm not that sort of person who is that much interested in video games or something.
Of course
not.
You're a medical
student. So I want to
interrupt
you and I want to tell you my own opinion about this matter. Actually, there are many things in this life that I really treasure. And I think the right question is what you don't treasure in your life, actually. But, you know, besides the family, the situation, facilities, everything that I have in this life, I think there is one thing that I really treasure, and it is my health, you know.
Alhamdulillah, yeah.
And this is, I think, one of the most important parts of everybody's life, because, as you know, there are many even quotes and hadith in Islam and even all of the religions around the world that, you know, mention the importance of actually health in your day-to-day life. When I go in hospitals and I see that kind of sick people, it's like something is missing. So, my dear brother, let's go for a short break then. We're going to come back and, go on this hot topic.
This is IRIB English Radio. You are listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are here at Youth Station and we're talking about a nice topic about treasure and what you actually evaluate as your treasure in your life. So, as my dear brother at the last part of the episode was really interested in, and he was really excited about video games or something, and in this part, I'm going to tell you my own actually thing that I really treasure in this life, and this is music.
Yeah, music is very important.
Yeah, exactly. I think there is a deep connection between our soul and music. And whenever I listen to music, actually, I don't like that much singers or something. I like the musics that are only musics. You know what? I think this is the essence of the actually true art or something. And when I listen to that, I feel like, okay, there is a deep connection between my soul and this part. And this is something beyond my being.
Yeah,
you know?
Just very quickly, we're talking about halal music here. We're not talking about haram music, obviously. Look
at
what
I don't like singers. I'm telling you that, And
By the way, Final Fantasy VII has a wicked soundtrack. And I listen to that as well. And I see what you mean. It does help you connect. But what kind of music do you listen to?
Actually, my favorite musical instrument is piano. So I love classical pianos or something. And they are really interesting. When I listen to them, it feels like every song has a story to tell you.
Absolutely. And, but what kind of music? Like classical music?
Classical.
You like classical music?
Yeah.
Yeah, music is definitely one of those things that we should treasure. It's given so much to humanity in terms of art, in terms of thought. I think it was Imam Khomeini, he said that there's a type of music that exists in the West that doesn't exist in the East. And it's a type of music that can bring about a revolution. Whereas in the East, music or ghina, it was pretty much, you know, haram. Back in the day, I'm talking like way back in the day, like
I know.
Years and centuries ago. It was like the type of music that would bring you towards the dunya. But there's a type of music that actually takes you towards akhirah, takes you towards God. And you can really feel this kind of sense of revolution stirring within you. You know, this feeling of change that's taking place inside you.
The thing I'm going to tell you that there is a beautiful story that tells that you cannot understand the value of something until you lose it.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to go through that. And
my mom always says that to me.
It seems like you are the youth generation here and I'm the older one, but it's vice versa, actually. But I'm going to ask you that, do you evaluate what you have right now? Or no, you ignore them. And after losing that, okay, you will understand, oh my gosh, what a precious thing I had.
Oh yeah, absolutely. There's loads of things I don't treasure as much as I should. You know, there's so much of Islam which is really about thankfulness. Every time we say Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, you know, 10 times a day, Allah has told us to recite this prayer. And I went into the tafsir of it, you know, Alhamdulillah. I was like, all praise be to Allah, you know, what is this really referring to? And the crux of it is this idea of thankfulness.
Yeah.
This real idea of thankfulness for everything that we've been given. As you mentioned, health as well. I mean, only recently when my health actually went bad, did I realize what a great blessing it is.
Yeah.
And Imam Ali alayhi salam, one of the things that he says is, look, take advantage of your health before your sickness, your youth before your old age, your life before your death. And these are things that we simply don't do.
Yeah.
The Holy Quran also says, إِنَّ هَدَيْنَاهُ السَّبِيلِ إِمَّا شَاكِرًا وَإِمَّا كَفُورًا. It says, we've guided him. You know, Allah is saying we've already guided him to the right path. He may be thankful or unthankful.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not in a level to be that much thankful without any kind of physical sense. You know what I mean? There are some intellectual people that, okay, they are in a high level of faith and a high level of thankfulness. Like, I'm not at that level. When I go to nature and I look at a sea, look at the ocean, look at the trees, you know, it is somehow more touchable for me, myself, as a youth generation. And I think you have to go through it. You have to look at everything around you and sometimes think about it or reflect about it. And that will help you to be more thankful about what you have in this life.
Yeah, to reconnect with nature.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of forest showers?
No. I don't know.
Forest bathing, I think it's called, or forest showers. I can't remember exactly, but it's Japanese anyway.
Okay.
So it's the idea that you should actually go to the wilderness because it's actually really good for your psychology. It's good for your mental state. If you're going through depression, there's some chemicals that are released by trees, actually, which actually help us to have a more kind of stable emotional equilibrium.
Nice.
And so, yeah, definitely reconnecting with nature itself definitely, definitely helps you.
Okay, that was an actually beautiful fact that you told me. I've never heard of these chemicals that are released from trees or something. And that was really nice to hear. And also, in our bodies, we have many chemicals that, you know, are released when you go through something that has special pleasure for you. But as you know, there are many people that, there are many ways, actually, to release your pains or something or soothe them in day-to-day life.
Crying.
And some of them... No, I'm not talking about that sort of thing. I'm going to go through something that are haram or something in our religion.
Bloodletting? You can release lots of negative energy.
I'm going to go through, for example, there are some ways, there are some drugs or even that some youth generation will use, you know, just to soothe their pains. We have many drugs that even we do, we actually use in medical science or something, but they use it in a bad way.
Like antidepressants?
Somehow. Somehow that much, but in adult age, that will be harmful to your body. And I want to tell you that if there are something that we treasure in our lives or something and evaluate them, why should we go through this way? What is the main reason, the main root in ourselves that we choose the wrong way to soothe our pains? At the same time, that we have something that we treasure, we have important thing in our lives, and so on. Why, for example, one person should go through this road to choose the wrong way to soothe his pain? Yeah.
I think it's a battle between the intellect and the wahm, the imagination. So when you go to akhlaq in Islam, it's really interesting because especially the Shia school of thought, it is so based on the intellect. You have to intellectually approach everything. But what happens is we end up approaching things and problems through our emotions. And when we do that, we often find the wrong solutions to problems, which aren't actually solutions at all.
Yeah.
So let's say you have a problem, you have something that's causing you depression, something that's causing you pain, something that's causing you anxiety. If you approach that intellectually, inshallah, you know, I promise you it will get resolved. I promise you.
Yeah.
The problem is we don't do that. we always approach it through emotions. And so then we go, okay, you know, I'm going to smoke, I'm going to have weed, I'm going to have ecstasy, I'm going to do drugs, I'm going to listen to haram music, I'm going to do all sorts of things which actually temporarily they make us feel like we've solved the problem. You know, we're alleviated a little bit.
Yeah.
But actually in the long term, it doesn't solve the problem. It actually just covers it up.
Yeah, that was a nice answer, actually, you know, but I think the same way, because sometimes you are lost, you know, I think it happens to many of us, even our listeners here, that you feel like this burden of life is somehow really heavy on your shoulder. There are times that difficulties are so actually difficult to handle that you're going to go through something that you shouldn't. But the thing is, I'm going to tell you that no matter how hard the life is, I don't like cliches. Actually, I'm going to first tell you that I don't like cliches, and I'm actually against any cliche here, because
some cliches are good.
Yeah, no, they're not good, because actually, cliches are some pure facts that are really true, but because most of the people tell us these kind of cliches repeatedly, we have a kind of special guard towards them.
Yeah, that's true.
And because of that, I don't like cliches. Or I try to tell you cliches in a beautiful way to convince you. You know, it's a better way, I think.
Let's hear one.
And I want you to tell me some reasons that could be acceptable for me, could be nice, you know, and, you know, make me to tell you, wow, nice, you know?
Yeah, you're right. We do need to find better solutions.
First, I want to again tell you that it doesn't matter how much difficulties you have. There are many things in your life that you have to treasure, that you have to evaluate, that and that you have to pay attention to.
And let me add this as well. Guys, you should treasure everything. This is what I'm going to leave you with because we've run out of time now. just treasure everything Allah has given you. Everything.
It's a blessing.
And eat chocolate. It's very important.
Nice.
If you can, eat chocolate.
Yeah, thank you for your suggestion, dear brother. So we're running out of time. This is all for today's episode. And I wish you enjoy all the discussion of today. And I wish you farewell. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran says reports that it has supplied missiles to Russia are completely wrong, and that a small number of drones supplied were sent before the war in Ukraine. New polls are indicating a growing number of Americans are worried about the breakout of political violence in the U.S. just as the countdown begins to midterm elections. And in Peru...